Thanks for joining us. I'm Catty Kay, sitting in for Diane Rehm. A liberal icon in American politics has died. Senator Ted Kennedy lost his battle with brain cancer last night at his home in Massachusetts. The Democratic lawmaker was the third longest-serving senator in U.S. history. He was known for championing the causes of social justice. He had a hand in nearly every major piece of liberal legislation enacted over the past half century. But it was health care that Kennedy recently called the cause of his life. Joining me by phone from New York to reflect on the life and legacy of Senator Ted Kennedy, Edward Klein, author of the new book, Ted Kennedy, The Dream That Never Died. And Neil Kerwin is here in the studio with me. He is president of American University. We will be having other guests too during the course of this hour. Ed Klein, I just wanted to start with you. You've written a book about Ted Kennedy. It came out recently. Your thoughts this morning?
Well, my thoughts, like everyone else's, is one of sadness and kind of a wonderment that yet again, just before Kennedy was about to achieve some breakthrough, he was snatched from us. This happened to John Kennedy before the Civil Rights and Voting Rights bills, Bobby before he almost won the Democratic nomination, and now Teddy, as the Senate comes to grips with a health care bill, he doesn't live long enough to see it enacted. It's very sad, and makes one wonder what stars the Kennedys were born under and why they have to suffer so much.
When you think of Ted Kennedy and you think of his long history in U.S. politics and you think of his two brothers, he is, of course, the only one of the three brothers who has died of natural causes. And that extraordinary start he had in political lives, the ups and downs of his political fortunes. And I think of his booming voice and booming presence. And I think it's worth listening to him this morning as we remember him. This is Ted Kennedy from the Democratic National Convention in 1980.
For all those whose cares have been our concern, the work goes on, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die.
Ted Kennedy there speaking on August the 12th, 1980 in New York City, just after he had lost, of course, the Democratic nomination for the presidency to Jimmy Carter. And it was what many have called the finest speech of his political career. It's also, Ed Klein, the subtitle of your book, The Dream That
Yes.
Never Died.
Well, it is his best speech. And, you know, when listening to him, you wonder whether he realizes that the microphone was ever invented. He can fill an auditorium on his own without a microphone. And how did that come about? Well, I think there are many reasons, but one of them is that he learned his craft at the knee of his grandfather, Francis Honey Fitzgerald, who, of course, gave speeches throughout Boston when he was mayor, before and after he was mayor, for that matter, and participated in these incredible, colorful, torchlight parades, and made himself heard to the far reaches of his audience outdoors. And Ted loved his grandfather, and his grandfather reciprocated those feelings. And he is truly, Ted Kennedy was truly a great Irish-American politician in the best sense of that word.
You know, Ed, listening to the television and the radio this morning and to people who had known Ted Kennedy all of his life and the tributes that they were paying to him, one of the things that struck me was obviously the sadness, of course, at his passing, but the incredible joy with which people spoke about him this morning. There was humor, there was laughter, there was a real love of life in the way that people gave their tributes to Ted Kennedy this morning as well. And that really struck me.
Well, me too. And I think there's a good reason for that. And that's because Ted Kennedy treated people that way, the way they now are treating his passing. I recall an anecdote about Ted Kennedy and Strom Thurmond, the unreconstructed Southern racist going at each other on the floor of the Senate. And then when the debate was over, they went into the cloakroom and Ted put his arm around Strom Thurmond and said, "Okay, Strom, let's go up to my office and have a drink and I'll give you a couple of judges." He knew how to work the Senate, and he liked working the Senate. He liked that atmosphere. He was a guy's guy, if you will. And at a time when the Senate was practically 100% men, and he enjoyed the jousting and did not personalize it.
Neil Cohen, president of American University, of course, your family has known the Kennedy family. Your father was on the campaign trail with yes. the Kennedys, and you knew him as well from your connection at American University and from his connection and the importance that he gave to higher education. I think it's typical, isn't it, of Ted Kennedy that one of the causes that he championed, of course, was education in this country.
Absolutely. I think one of the great legacies of Senator Kennedy will be his ability to put together the need for economic opportunity with the opportunity for education. He's a man from virtually the moment he entered the Senate, championed those two causes, put them together in ways that provided education for generations of students who might otherwise have been deprived of it. The service he did to American higher education in the process is incalculable. He's an individual who understood American higher education intimately. He was a great champion of higher education in his home state, but he did not limit his vision to Massachusetts. He understood that this country was going to be strong. It was going to be strong because it was populated by educated, competitive people, and that we could not limit ourselves only to the privileged and to the well-born, but that American higher education had to have its doors open to everyone.
And yet here was this man who had grown up in a world of incredible privilege, political privilege, financial privilege, and there he was wanting to open the doors to America's universities and colleges to as many people from poorer backgrounds as possible.
It speaks to a generosity of spirit and a generosity of intellect. He understood that he arrived at his place in life in ways that most of us can't. But he also understood that arriving at that place carried with it tremendous obligation and tremendous responsibility. His life in public service is a testimony to what people who are given those privileges can accomplish if they put their minds to it. The background of the family is, as Mr. Klein suggested, extraordinary in so many different ways. But I wanted to reflect on one thing Mr. Klein said. This is a man who combined in his one person the capacity to inspire and yet the capacity to direct policy at levels of detail that are remarkable. We often find in people the ability to speak and to bring crowds to their feet, and we see in others the ability to move complex legislation to resolution. It is unusual to see both in one man, and we did with Senator Kennedy.
Ed Klein, this morning Time magazine has on its website a tribute to Ted Kennedy, and the title of it is "The Death of Ted Kennedy, the Brother Who Mattered Most." And in some ways, he never successfully got to the presidency, which is what he had perhaps assumed he was going to do or wanted to do back there before 1980. But maybe the impact he had was the greater for it.
Oh, I think that's true. And in part, it's simply because he lived so much longer than either of his brothers, and they were cut off at the promise, and he wasn't. I do think when one weighs his achievements, and I couldn't agree more with Neil Cohen when he mentions how Ted combined the inspirational aspect of politics with this amazing operation that he ran in the Senate. He had the largest and by far the best office in the Senate. Everybody recognized that. Everyone wanted to, all young people, all the best people wanted to work for him. Every night he went home with a thing called the bag, which was a huge briefcase stuffed with papers, stuffed with legislation and memos, and he would go through it every night and come in the next morning with those papers marked up in the margins with things like "see me," "no," "ugh," "ugh!" exclamation point, or "say better." I mean, he was a good editor as well, and he really did pay attention to those kind of. He went. He was totally, completely prepared when he walked onto the floor of the Senate. He knew the bills backwards and forwards.
Ed Klein there, the author of Ted Kennedy, The Dream That Never Died. I'm also joined here in the studio by Neil Kerwin. We are remembering this hour, Senator Ted Kennedy, who died last night after a battle with brain cancer. We will be taking your calls during the course of this program, 1-800-433-8850, or send us an email to drshow@wmu.org with your questions, comments, and remembrances, of course, of the great Lion of the Senate, Ted Kennedy. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Cathy Kay of the BBC, sitting in for Diane Rehm. We are remembering this hour Senator Ted Kennedy, who died last night at the age of 77. We'll be taking your questions and comments during the course of this hour. 1-800-433-8850 is the phone number here. You can also send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. I want to bring in now Bella English, who joins us from Boston. She's a reporter with the Boston Globe. She's a contributor to the book Last Lion, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. Bella, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you.
You have written, of course, about Ted Kennedy, his legacy, and his early life. He did have a life of privilege, of course. He was born into this extraordinary, legendary Kennedy family, but he was the last of the children, and it wasn't always easy for him, was it?
Well, he was the last of nine. He was the fourth of four brothers, and the expectations for him were low, frankly. He was sort of the court jester of the family. He knew what his role was, and it was to be entertaining and to be lovable. And he was a beloved, extreme baby brother. So that when he finally became, well, not finally, but at age 36, he became, by default, the family patriarch after Bobby's death. He was spectacularly unprepared for that. And he also, at the same time, was becoming the patriarch of the extended Kennedy family. And so it was a role that he really had to grow into. And there were a lot of pitfalls along the way, a lot of failings. But ultimately, he did become the patriarch both of the Kennedy family and of the liberal wing of the Democratic Party.
Bella, we've talked, of course, during the course of this program about his amazing qualities and his amazing triumphs legislatively, the power of his character in the Senate. But you mentioned there some of the pitfalls along the way, and there were moments in his life where it looked like he wasn't going to fulfill his best potential. Chappaquiddick, the cheating at Harvard. There were definitely low points in his career, too.
There were many low points. You know, starting probably with the cheating scandal at Harvard, he was expelled. They told me he could come back after 2 years. He joined the Army, which ended up being a really formative experience for him because he joined the Army as a private, not as an officer, as his brothers had been. The world of difference between being an officer and being a grunt. And this experience really opened a lens in the wider world for him that his brothers had not had. He was in the barracks with the guys, and he got to know that world, and I think it helped him become the politician he became. He wasn't just the privileged rich boy anymore, at least not in the barracks he wasn't.
Ed Klein, when we talk about Ted Kennedy and the troubles he had in his early life, and of course it was, you know, Chappaquiddick really that derailed his hopes of ever becoming president, wasn't it?
Well, I'm not so sure. In my view, he still could have become president after Chappaquiddick if he really wanted to become president after Chappaquiddick. We know that it's all very famous, and Bella certainly knows this as well as I do, that when 1980 rolled around and Roger Mudd, who was a family friend of the Kennedys, sat him down in Hannahsport and asked him, "Well, Senator, why do you want to be president?" Ted Kennedy couldn't answer that question. He hummed and hawed and just bumbled the answer. And I think in part there was a psychological block operating inside him to becoming president and replacing his brother Jack or his brother Bobby. I don't think he could bring himself to do that. And once he lost the nomination in 1980 to Jimmy Carter, whom he despised, and of course, who despised him in turn, he really was free from then on, even though he toyed from time to time with the idea of running for president. But he was free of that albatross, in my view, and could concentrate and did concentrate on becoming a great legislator.
And then he seemed to have had a personal turnaround, didn't he, Bella, when he married Vicky. And the demons that had seemed to haunt him personally, the excesses of his personal life, disappeared almost. Do you think that's true, Bella?
Could you repeat the question, please?
The turnaround in his personal life when he married Vicky and Vicky Reggie, and he seemed to become more comfortable, more settled in his own skin then after that marriage.
I think that's true. I think both the 1980 loss and his marriage to Vicky were both really defining roles in him becoming, the senator that he wanted to become. I would question whether or not he really ever really wanted the presidency. I think that was an expectation sort of foisted upon him by maybe other family members and also by, the Democratic public. I think he felt most comfortable in the Senate, which is a collegial body, with the give and take and the compromising and the back and forth. His brothers were more comfortable with the executive role, the lone wolf role. Ted was a much more comfortable and accomplished politician than his brothers. His father always said he was the most gifted politician of the family. I think what happened was in the 80s, he sort of enjoyed a second bachelorhood, and he couldn't really, although he was able to work on improving the lives of others, he didn't seem to be in control of his own personal life. And when he met Vicky, she did bring some focus and discipline into his personal life, and she also became, a valued political consultant and advisor to him. So I think that Vicky has been a really positive influence in his life and with the voters, because he became a more settled person, more focused, more disciplined. And, of course, he's always had that huge work ethic, where even though when his own life seemed to be spinning out of control, he was able to nail down all kinds of legislation for the American public.
Bella English, a reporter with the Boston Globe and contributor to the book Last Lion, The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy. Bella, thank you so much for joining us on the line there from Boston. I want to read now an email that's come in from Jerry Hoffman from Michigan. Jerry writes to us, "The real significance of the passing of Ted Kennedy is that it is the end of civility in the U.S. Congress. He is the only Democrat who could actually talk Republicans into considering providing for the common good." I think that what Jerry is touching on there is this incredible capacity he had on the Senate floor, both to fight for his causes, but then to go up to his opponents and embrace them with that huge big bear hug that he had and really reach Ed Klein across the aisles in a way that that perhaps people are finding it harder to do now.
I think that's true. he was friends with anyone who would let him be friends. That included the most right-wing members of the Republican Party, the centrist Democrats, so-called Blue Dog Democrats, and, of course, his fellow liberals, which a cohort that became thinner and thinner as the years went on. He did not personalize, as I've said before. He understood that in order to get things passed in the Senate, you essentially really needed 60 votes. A majority wasn't enough, because if you didn't have 60 votes, you could easily be talked to death, filibustered. And so that really places tremendous emphasis on coalition building, Caddy, which you talked about before. And he was a great coalition builder and liked building coalitions. For instance, I remember John McCain saying that when they were working together on a bill, he asked him to come over for breakfast at his home then in McLean, Virginia. "But don't bring your staff with you, John." And McCain said, "Why not?" And he said, "Well, because, you know, the staff has to show off and prove that, you know, they're holier than the Pope, whereas you and I can really cut a deal and give in to each other a little bit without losing face."
Neil Kirwan, listening to Bob Kerry, former Senator Bob Kerry, this morning, one of the things that he said about his old friend Ted Kennedy was two things. He said he valued competence, which actually is a quality that is underestimated, he said, and he had huge respect for others.
He did. And I think Senator Kerry, now President Kerry, has it exactly right, as does Mr. Klein. His ability to populate Washington with extraordinarily gifted people after they spend time with him is legendary. You cannot build the kind of staff that Mr. Klein spoke to a moment ago without a tremendous sense of judgment about the capacity and quality and intelligence of individuals. We run into people in Washington, you and I, every day of the week who cut their teeth on President Kennedy's staff. The concern for others and the respect for other points of view is evident with the coalitions he built in those areas of public policy that I'm most familiar. The one that probably has me sitting here today is higher education. If we take a look at Title IX, for example, his leadership there, the Americans with Disabilities Act that he reached across the aisle to Senator Hatch to help develop and build, monuments that I think will be spoken of for generations. These are things that, as Mr. Klein pointed out, he was able to find those spaces, those parts of individual senators' interests and lives that touch them, in some cases quite personally, and build coalitions around them.
And how did he do it? What was it? Was it just his innate character? I think his hug was one of his most effective political weapons.
I think in part because the Senate came to respect his intelligence respect his dedication to the body itself, which has been written about but is oftentimes not emphasized quite as much as it should be. He respected the institution, and those who worked with him knew he respected the institution. But above all else, it was this capacity to see where interests finally come together. This is an individual who, in his public statements, seems to me to be consistently forward-looking, consistently optimistic. He spent a great deal of his time in the Senate of the United States finding places where people could agree, and understood the legislative process was indeed an act of compromise.
Neil Cohen, president of American University. We are going to be taking your phone calls in just a minute. First of all, I want to bring in Jeff Garin. He's a Democratic pollster with Peter Hart Research Associates. Jeff, thank you so much for joining the Diane Rehm Show.
Sure. Good morning.
We've been speaking about Ted Kennedy and, of course, his personal legacy, the family that he came from. Tell me a little bit about his legislative achievements. He really embraced so many liberal causes during the course of his 9 terms in the Senate. What are the ones that really stand out for you as the high points of his political career?
Oh, really, how long do we have? I mean, he was the go-to person and the champion on issues related to civil rights and public education and educational equity and access to higher education and labor standards and fair treatment of working people in America. The list really goes on. Obviously, healthcare was a passion of his, and we often think about his role on these domestic issues. He was also a very important voice on military affairs. Served very effectively on the Armed Services Committee, and brought a very important perspective there. Was an important voice in framing the case against President Bush's conduct of the war in Iraq, so that his reach was enormous. But again, I think what is extraordinary about Senator Kennedy was the balance he represented between working for his causes in a passionate and compelling way, with a sense of responsibility about getting things done, and it is a fine balance. And there are many good people in the Senate who are excellent in espousing and feeling passionately about their causes. There are many fine people in the Senate who are good at doing the deal, but there are precious few who do both at the same time. And Ted Kennedy was really one of those rare people, and what made him made his contribution so extraordinary.
Jeff, do stay with us. We'll be coming back to you in just a second. I want to open the phones now and go to Doug in Washington, D.C. Doug, you have a memory of Ted Kennedy and of his legislative achievements personally.
Well, mostly in terms of my work here for the Brady campaign to prevent gun violence. The senator was hugely important to our issue. Sarah Brady, Jim Brady's wife, when she first began to fight for the Brady law, Mr. Kennedy was one of the first senators that she visited. But I think it's also important to remember how important he was to the issue at large, because he and his family himself suffered such devastating gun violence, losing 2 brothers to assassins' bullets. And what many people don't remember is that the senator himself was a target of the same assassin that shot President Reagan and Jim Brady himself. It's really sad to a lot of us who work day in and day out in this issue to mark his passing, but we also celebrate his life and all the hard work that he did for us.
Doug, thank you very much. Ed Klein, that's what I'm hearing today, that people are sad at his passing and yet celebrating this huge life and his huge long list of accomplishments.
I think he'd be the last person who would want us, those he's left behind, to be morose and full of bathos. I think he
would come in with a big guffawing laugh and make us laugh,
he
too.
He would, and yes, and he, you're so right, he would. And he'd probably have a joke to tell as well.
You know, at his own expense.
Well, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but one of his favorite topics of humor was indeed Chappaquiddick itself. And he would ask people, have you heard any new jokes about Chappaquiddick? I mean, that is just the most amazing thing. Not that he didn't feel remorse about the death of Mary Jo Kopechne, but that he still always saw the other side of everything and the ridiculous side of things, too.
Ed Klein, former foreign editor of Newsweek and author of a new book on Ted Kennedy. We will be taking more of your questions and comments after this short break. We are remembering the life of Senator Ted Kennedy, who died last night after a battle with brain cancer at the age of 77. Do stay listening.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe on the web at germany.info, and by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, whose Kids Count is a state-by-state look at child well-being and the important role of data, at aecf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
The August Reader's Review, a story about friendship, love, and battles of will as two Scottish immigrants struggle to establish a homestead in Montana at the turn of the 20th century. That's Dancing at the Rascal Fair by Ivan Doig. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. I'm Katty Kay of the BBC, sitting in for Diane Rehm. And this hour we are remembering Ted Kennedy, who died last night at the age of 77. Jeff Guerin, I wanted to bring you back into the conversation. You were speaking a bit about his commitment to a huge range of causes and, of course, his lifelong commitment to liberalism. And I think, you know, in 2009, that looks very different from how it did during the 80s and during the 90s, when liberalism was something that people felt should be kept under a bushel, rather.
Yes, although, and at some level, I'd say that it's inaccurate to just say what his commitment was to liberalism. His commitment was to the well-being and welfare of people, and providing opportunities for people to get ahead. And I think, you know, that part of Ted Kennedy's longevity of success as a legislator is that he, while his goals didn't change, I think he understood the ways the world changed, and often adapted to that. He was not advocating all the same answers this decade of the 2000s as he would have in the 1960s, but he was very committed to giving people a chance and making sure that Americans who start out less well-advantaged have a real opportunity in life. And that really was permanent, enduring, and was a part of virtually everything he did.
Was he affected by the Republican takeover in Congress in 94 and then by Bush's victory in 2000? Did that change his political outlook?
He did, and I think this is a terribly important thing to be talking about right now in the context of health care, because I think lots of people are drawing the wrong lesson from Ted Kennedy's life, is that what folks are saying is, too bad, especially what Republicans are saying, is it's too bad there's not another Ted Kennedy in the Democratic leadership who knows how to make the deal. The reality is that Max Baucus, with the support of the White House and the Senate leadership, really are working very hard to make a deal. But the difference is that when George Bush was president, Ted Kennedy was willing to figure out how to come to a yes on No Child Left Behind and how to come to a yes on the Medicare prescription benefit Part D. And in both cases, did that in a way that enraged many members of the Democratic caucus and the Democratic political class who didn't want to hand George Bush victories. But Senator Kennedy believed that his job as a legislator was to legislate, to get things done. And he was willing to take risks and have the courage to do things that would be unpopular in his caucus in order to make a difference. It seems to me what is missing today on health care is that spirit on the Republican side, that now that President Obama is in office, there's not a Republican corollary to the role that Senator Kennedy played when George Bush was president on issues like No Child Left Behind and Medicare reform.
And that ability to reach out to people of the other side from both sides is clearly a quality that American political life needs more of. Jeff Garin, Democratic pollster with Peter Hart Research Associates. Jeff, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you so much. Take care.
I want to go back to the phones now. Of course, the number here is 1-800-433-8850. You can also send us questions and comments by email to drshow@wmu.org. Let's go to Cheryl in St. Louis, Missouri. Cheryl, I know you've been waiting. Thank you for joining the program.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on. I listen to the show every day, and I want to send my best to Diane.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that I was born at the end of the baby boom generation, and so I was raised through both Kennedy brothers in their assassinations, through Lyndon Johnson, through Martin Luther King, and saw Teddy Kennedy go from overcome great adversity. And these people all believed that we were responsible for our each other, that we really are our brother's keeper. And they believed in noblesse oblige. And because they had more, that they were responsible to give back. And that just doesn't seem to happen, or people don't seem to believe that anymore. And I just wanted to say that those people really impacted my life and how I think about things and the changes that I think need to be made. And I'm so sad that he passed, but I'm so glad to have known, been around while he was alive.
Cheryl, thank you. That is a lovely tribute there. Neil Cohen, you were sitting in the studio with me, nodding your head, listening to Cheryl's tribute there to Ted Kennedy.
It is. And what I hope is that Cheryl's point is taken to Senator Kennedy's life with the recognition that Senator Kennedy called on all of us to reach out beyond our own lives and perform important public service. People, I think, should remember the National Community Service Act, which he once again led. It was a message that, frankly, he left with the students of American University when he was on campus late in his life, in that instance, to endorse then-candidate Barack Obama for the presidency.
Of course, a turning point in the 2008 presidential election.
Those
campaign.
Who have since written about the campaign agree that that was a very important moment in the current president's campaign. But the message, the speech itself that Senator Kennedy delivered was as stirring as any I've heard him deliver save the 1980 speech, perhaps that's been referred to already. But I do want to remind those who are listening, you know, the tremendous challenge he's left for all of us, and that is that whatever our careers, whatever our occupations, whatever our personal positions in life, that urge to public service is something that we should nurture and that we should follow through with.
I want to open the phone again now. We are going to Republican strategist David Winston. David, thank you very much for joining the Diane Rehm Show this morning, president, of course, of the Winston Group. What are Republicans saying to you this morning about the death of Ted Kennedy?
Well, again, a stature of his, you know, somebody like that is clearly going to be missed, whatever the ideology. But, I think there's one thing in terms of if there's a thing to reflect on, given the unfortunate passing, is that this is an example of, you know, someone with a differing ideology, a differing party is not the enemy. They're just the opposition. And I think to some degree that was something that Senator Kennedy understood in terms of dealing with Republicans. There were ways to, in fact, engage people. And ultimately, to me, the legacy and what I'm hearing from other Republicans, the legacy is not so much the liberal lion as the sense, and I think Jeff Garin was alluding to this, that this was a fellow who dedicated his life to trying to make other people's lives better. And if we can all sort of pass on with that sort of legacy, it's not a bad outcome.
How did he do it? How did he reach out to people across the aisle, people with whom he had intense political differences, and yet he managed to find some sort of common cause? What was it about him that so many other senators and congressmen and congresswomen seemed to find so difficult to do?
Because ultimately, in the end, what he wanted to try to do was improve people's lives. And I mean, I'll give you a specific example of sort of, again, odd bedfellows. He working with John Boehner in terms of some education issues here in D.C., trying to help poor children attend Catholic schools. And they worked together very closely and very well in terms of sort of improving a lot of children's lives. Ultimately, to him, the important outcome wasn't how you got there, but that you did get there. And so with that in mind, he was willing to talk to a variety of people if he could see if there was a solution. Again, you know, No Child Left Behind is a good example. He was working with George Bush because he thought there were some elements within that program that were clearly going to help. And so that became the more important thing. And so it wasn't party first or ideology first. It was the citizens themselves first, and that's an admirable trait. And that's why I think you're going to hear sort of a lot of other Republicans say very positive things.
And, of course, tributes have been pouring in during the course of this day from John McCain, who he worked with on immigration recently, from Senator Orrin Hatch, from fellow Republican senators, many of whom he worked with during the course of his long career. David Winston, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
For calling into the program. Let's go to the phones now to Virginia in Dexter, Michigan. Virginia, thank you for joining the program.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on. This is one of the saddest days for me because I've written to Senator Kennedy quite a bit. I have a son with autism, and he was a champion of the developmentally disabled population, and I had many concerns, and he always wrote me back, and it's just a really, really sad day for our family. He was a great man, and I'm glad that I was able to experience some communication with him and to witness the great things that he did.
Well, Virginia, thank you very much for calling into the program, and your words there about how he wrote back to you. He was somebody who respected the people he worked with. In all his career in the Senate, I haven't ever heard of a story of a staffer who he was rude to. And yet, so many congresspeople, so many senators, have a moment where they might turn on a staffer or say something with a smile at one point and then go back into their offices with a very different tone. You just don't hear those stories, do you, Neil Cohen, about Ted Kennedy?
No, you don't. And his graciousness is legendary. Again, reflecting on a personal experience, when he attended the event at American University, he spent some time in the president's office after the event. We often forget that that Senator Kennedy suffered from some physical pain due to back injury that he experienced years and years before.
From his 1964 flight, where he nearly died, and of course in that small plane crash.
Absolutely. So we spent some time together in the office. He was extraordinarily gracious to American University colleagues of mine and staff who had assisted with the event. And after the event was over, wrote a note to me thanking me for giving him a chair to sit down in while he was here. I think it's emblematic of the point that was made moments ago that he somehow always found the time to extend these personal courtesies and kindnesses to people. And your point about never hearing that he had exchanged harsh words with a staff member is an extraordinary statement for someone who spent this much time in the United States Senate.
Ed Klein, I have an email here that I wanted to read to you from Nicole in Dallas. Nicole writes to us, "I have always felt that Senator Kennedy was one of the few big politicians who cared about regular people like me and about people less fortunate than I. Being a fellow Catholic, I also felt that his devotion to public service was his way of answering the call to Catholics that we're supposed to involve ourselves in civic life and our community, and that he dedicated his great intellect to that end. Do you have any insights on that?" writes Nicole.
Well, I think she's right, and I think we would be remiss if we forgot that the Kennedys, early on, when they came to this country, suffered a lot of the suffered at the hands of the establishment in a way that other people who immigrated later also did. That they were looked down upon. They were not allowed to join certain clubs. They were blackballed. They were shunned because they were Irish, because they were Catholic. These stories of the sufferings of the early Kennedys were handed down from generation to generation. And Joe Kennedy and Rose Kennedy handed those stories down to their children as well. And for whatever reasons, perhaps because he was the youngest or the most sensitive boy of the lot, in addition to his experience in the Army as a private, I think he had experience at home that also made him sensitive to the wider world because of the Kennedys' own experience. And instead of being bitter or turning his back on the world and saying, "I'm going to be a playboy and just enjoy my riches," he decided to turn that experience into something positive by opening the door of opportunity for others, as the Kennedys had to bang down the door themselves.
Ed, you've written about the Kennedy family as well as about Ted Kennedy. To what extent was he both a son of the Kennedy family but developed into something apart from them, something of his own, that he took on his own history and his own legacy as well?
I really never thought of him as apart from the Kennedys. That's an interesting thought. He was so much like the Kennedys in so many different ways. Making me think about this, and that's good. A friend of his said once to me that when he played tennis with the Kennedys, they would often call a ball that was out in order to make a point, whereas Ted would often call a ball in for the opponent that was actually out. So he didn't have that killer competitive streak that his brothers had. I'm not saying he wasn't a competitive person. He was, but it wasn't a killer competitive streak. He left room for the others to also be heroic and win, too.
Ed Klein, that's a lovely story to have told and a great analogy for the life of Ted Kennedy there, somebody who called the out ball in order to let other people win. Ed Klein is the author of Ted Kennedy, The Dream That Never Dies. Neil Kerwin has been in the studio with me, too. We started the program with some words of Ted Kennedy. Here is Ted Kennedy at his final speech before a Democratic National Convention in August of 2008 in Denver, Colorado.
For me, this is a season of hope. New hope for a justice and fair prosperity for the many, and not just for the few. New hope. And this is the cause of my life. New hope that we will break the old gridlock and guarantee that every American, north, south, east, west, young, old, will have decent, quality health care as a fundamental right and not a privilege.
He concluded,
"The work begins anew. The hope rises again, and the dream lives on."
I'm Catty Kay. Thanks for listening.